Tights and Mites podcast is the perfect wrestling podcast. There's a guy named Hal, and there's Danielle, and this guy Mike Eagle is there as well. Tights and Mites podcast. Tights and Mites.
Podcast, wrestling, talking wrestling. It's Tights and Fights with Mike, Hal, and Danielle. Greetings, grappling fans. I'm going to stop. Welcome to Tights and Fights.
That was so great.
The show that discusses wrestling with the sincerity and hilarity that it deserves. I'm Hal Lublin, V2.0.
Ooh.
And yes.
We popped him.
Ooh. Lublin.
So dumb. I'm joined by my fellow members of the Nation of Conversation, the hopeful commissioner of Kitten Championship Wrestling, Danielle Radford.
Crossing them fingers, fam.
How about it?
And Mike the Manville Eagle. Coming up on this week's show, the kingdom's been united. A dusty club. A luchadora blocks the Dora, and a lot more. But first...
A lot more?
A lot more. So much more. But first... This past weekend, the WWE crowned its inaugural United Kingdom champion. They held a 16-man tournament on the WWE Network live from Blackpool, England. Let's hear from Michael Cole, who called the action with Nigel McGuinness.
Tonight, one of 16 men begin their journey to become the first ever WWE United Kingdom Champion. We're on the northwest coast of England on the Irish Sea. This is Blackpool, Lancashire. But inside, you are looking live at the Empress Ballroom, where we're ready to make history. Greetings, Grapple fans. I'm Michael Cole. And
now, I was sick this weekend. I was a little sick boy. So I did not get to watch the UK tournament, mostly because I could barely think straight and I did not remember it was happening.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks
for being here.
So I'm going to let myself out. Mike, you watched a couple matches.
Yeah, Danielle, I watched like two.
You saw the whole thing.
Yeah.
How was it, both of you? What'd you think?
Well, my part's little. So I didn't like it much, but that's because I think it was just too much of not knowing nobody and too much of... the Cruiserweight Classic, it was just different styles of people I didn't know, and that was a little something. This was like a bunch of people I don't know from one place, and it didn't do much for me. I saw Pete Dunne. I like him.
Okay.
Other than that, I didn't see a bunch that made me like want to jump up and watch it again the next day. I was touring this weekend, too, so it was a little tough.
Well, thanks for coming.
You're welcome.
Danielle?
I love the idea. I like the execution. I think I just discovered that maybe just like a lot of that like English British style of wrestling and character is maybe just not for me.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's okay. Sometimes things are not for you. And I didn't get it. I wish I would have gotten more into it. I wasn't super psyched. And also maybe, and this is me, I feel like I've been, I won't say burned because it's not terrible, but I've been so kind of underwhelmed by 205 Live that part of me is like, are they doing too much?
Yes.
Like, is
yes.
it too many? Is
the
it too much
yes.
stuff?
Right.
It's too many things.
Instead of focusing on the things they have. So that also kind of diluted some of the fun that I might have had with it when all I can think is like, this is awesome, but how am I going to be underwhelmed by it in a couple of weeks? And that's a bummer, and that's on me as well. Like, I should go into things with more hope.
I don't think
and
so.
A little less, well, like,
I think, I think it's you know, as wrestling fans, it's on us to learn lessons sometimes. And right now, the lesson seems to be they will keep making stuff, whether they should or not. They will continue to do so. And I think I, for one, between the Raw and the SmackDown and the Talking Smack and the 205 and the NXT, I have quite enough wrestling to watch, let alone anything outside of WWE that I might want to watch.
Right. So, but they are in this phase right now where they're throwing a lot of stuff at the wall. I mean, I know the network's a couple years old now, but mm-hmm. I think this is their foray into original wrestling. And while it's said that this tournament's going to lead to a UK-centric weekly wrestling show on the network, we'll be following it up, and we'll sort of see what happens and more available as we have it. In the meantime, though, we've had our first wrestler death of 2017. Superfly Jimmy Snuka, who was a WWE Hall of Famer best known for his famous high-flying style, may also have murdered a woman named Nancy Argentino in 1983, something WWE is doing their best to shove to the background in the aftermath of his passing. How will you guys remember Jimmy Snuka? For me, it'll always be flying off the cage onto Don Morocco in Madison Square Garden. That's what I remember about him and his wrestling figure, his LJN wrestling figure, posed like everybody else. What about you guys?
I've been caught up in the hoopla surrounding the trial and retrial and reopening of the case and all the details of that with the woman who lost her life. And I've been so caught up into that that I think that really has kind of overshadowed his legacy for me. I think, you know, the fact that he was recently declared not able to stand trial. So, you know, he kind of, in a sense, has gotten away with it.
Yes.
Another time, mm-hmm. You know. And I guess it's just in the current climate with things as they are politically and, you know, at a time when we were, I think, as a society, we're just like kind of coming around to really shining a light and being hard socially on like violence towards women.
Yeah.
I think that chapter of his life and the fact that it's very likely that he was guilty in that, it never really had to pay any sort of anything for that. It's kind of I'm gonna think about that, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like no way that it's never going to be what overshadows it. And,
sure.
As everybody knows, I didn't watch a super lot of it when I was like younger. So a lot of it I came back to. And obviously there's like the Piper's Pit and there's, you know, a bunch of that other stuff. But it is that, you know, that trial is always going to cast a shadow over his legacy.
Yes.
Forever. And it should. It should. Because it does look, at least for, you know, from someone who's not, I followed a little bit of it. I'm not there, wasn't there. But as someone who's looking on the outside, a lot of what happened was it was dropped because he had all of the cancer and everyone knew that he was going to pass away soon.
Yeah.
And so there was no point in standing this man up for trial knowing that he was going to pass away soon. And he did. It's got to hurt for his family. I'm sorry for Tamina and for the folks that loved him. I'm also sorry for the family of the woman that there's never going to be real answers for them.
Right.
Either.
But it's also an important reminder to everybody to continue to ask questions and be curious and get information about things, which is an odd piece of advice, but there you have it.
I found it very helpful, Hal.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for reminding us women are people now, too, Mike.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, there is that,
I appreciate
too.
That.
You know?
Women are people ratified by the Constitution.
Did you guys know that?
Then repealed by Trump.
Repealed by Trump on Monday. Now, a less controversial WWE legend in the news this week, Kurt Angle is headed into the WWE Hall of Fame. Guys, I love me some Kurt Angle.
Yes!
I will go down in history saying that his 2000, from January 1st, 2000 to December 31st, 2000, is the best single year any professional wrestler has ever had. Just a quick recap, he won the European title, the Intercontinental title, the World title, the King of the Ring, and main evented 5 pay-per-views.
How about it?
After debuting that October or November was his first appearance.
Heat up ass.
Just
heat
a natural. Ass. Like what a great guy. I mean, I was thrilled and surprised. I know there've been talks of him coming back to WWE, but it was a big surprise to have him going into the Hall of Fame sort of off the bat, especially when you feel like maybe there's a little bit more left in the tank.
I'm so excited about this.
Oh, my God.
I love Kurt Angle so much. I was talking with producer Julian, because we're friends and we talk.
Sure.
And he asked me, he was like, do you feel like this is kind of like he was your Bret Hart? And I'm like, oh, my God, yeah. Like, for me, he is my Bret Hart. Just like a beast of a technical wrestler. Mm-hmm. But, like, he took that cornball personality and made it into a just this huge larger than life character. He had the mic skills as well as again, like he won Olympic stuff. Like, he's amazing at wrestling. I'm so excited about this. I can't wait. Gable makes it even better when he's like, Kurt Angle, and I'm like,
Yeah,
it's fantastic, and I cried tears of happiness.
He's going to be a great community guy for them to have just on their payroll. But are you excited at the prospect of him being in a managerial role with a team like American Alpha?
Yes!
That seems to be the rumor. Is that the new team angle that you want to see? Danielle, you're saying yes?
Do it!
Mike, you're being silent.
Yeah, I don't care. I'm sorry, I'm a heel. But what I want and what I cannot wait for, and I even popped a little bit when it happened with the Hall of Fame announcement. I just want to hear that music.
Oh, yeah.
And come out and hear them people say you suck. And I just want to have that moment. I'm going to cry real tears like Danielle when that happens. And, you know, I really just want him to have, I want him to enjoy one more moment in the sun because he's been away for so long.
Yeah.
And he's been crying so loudly.
He
for
just
Daddy
wanted to
WWE
come home.
To come pick him up from daycare. He's been crying so long. And it tripped me out because just a couple of weeks ago, there was this rumor that he had told people he was no longer accepting indie bookings because he was going to be starting back with the WWE in April. And then, like so many times before, there was like some news from the WWE, like background news that, oh no, they're not talking to Kurt Angle. They don't know what he's talking about. Yeah. I'm like, oh, not again.
It happens
heartbreak.
Like every year for the past couple years where he's been like, oh, I'm talking to those guys, we're buds. And then you find out like, I mean, they'll answer your phone call, Kurt, but I don't know if you're going
to
do anything.
What I think was happening is that they would talk to him. He would get so excited, he'd tell everybody.
Yeah.
And then they would hear that he's telling people. Yeah. And they'd be like, no, Kurt, no.
Now follow me on this one. Kurt Angle may manage American Alpha. American Alpha are the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, and that means there are tag team champions on Raw. Raw Tag Team Champions are Cesaro and Sheamus, who faced off against Gallows and Anderson Monday night. The club did get the win, but it was decided that it was a disqualification instead of a pin, which means they do not get the titles. Now, Mike, it's been pretty clear that the clubs needed a win for a while. How did you feel about it coming this way?
It was weird, man. It felt like a dusty finish.
I've never seen
a dusty finish happen to a heel ever. That is the most amazing thing. And you know, like, it made me feel bad for them, you know?
Yeah.
It was weird. Like, yeah, I thought the booking thought behind a dusty finish for heels, I thought it was strange. But I am glad they got a win. I was really happy when they won. Not necessarily, like, I was a little weirded out for it.
Right.
But I was looking at that match and I kept having a thought that, like, man, these are two guys that have, like, that are kind of like Rusev and that they can, like, toil in mid-card land for a while, but they can be heated up at any given time if you just give them a bunch of wins in a row.
Because
they look the part, they know what they're doing out there, you know?
That is such a great point.
So hopefully. Maybe, you know, they're trying to show us these guys can win and heat them up for something good. You know?
That's what I'm thinking. That's why I'm not super disappointed about the win. Obviously, it would have been better if they would have gotten the title straight out. But what that tells me is that something's about to happen with them. And they're starting to they're going to be up for some kind of run. Maybe they will get the tag titles or maybe they'll just have a great bunch of classic matches with those guys. But it tells me that something's going to happen with them. And that's all I want.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I'm happy.
I like matches like this where it gives the heels a reason to state they need a title shot.
Yep.
We beat them twice.
Yep.
I don't care how you counted it. Now we're going to come for the belt. So we'll see how that develops. They don't have another pay-per-view after Royal Rumble until WrestleMania,
so they're
I don't
chilling
think.
Out.
So,
oh,
when
okay.
is Fastlane? When is Fastlane?
Oh, maybe there will be a Fastlane.
Fastlane.
Oh, that's right. There's a fast lane.
I know.
Ass
I'm
lane.
Sorry, guys. I ruined everything by reminding us that we have other pay-per-views.
See, I thought they were going to dial it back some or some shit.
Yeah, they're only doing 900 this year. Moving over to SmackDown, Jerry the King Lawler made his return to TV to ask Dolph Ziggler why he's been healing it up lately. Dolph responded with complete silence and then reminding Lawler of his 2012 heart attack that may or may not have been caused by Ziggler dropping continuous elbows on his chest. Do you guys think this is a good way to get heat? Or is using a real-world health scare in an angle in poor taste?
I didn't mind it. And I didn't mind it for two reasons. he survived the heart attack,
right?
Which is probably the biggest reason. But he survived it. Not only did he survived it, he continued to work full time after he had made what was felt to be like a decent enough recovery. He worked full time for like a minute after that before he started being cut back and then moved on to SmackDown because it was pre-taped and safer, I'm assuming. So that, and two, he was there. So it wasn't like Dolph was like doing that and you know, cutting that promo, and Jerry had to hear about it on Twitter, like what happened with a bunch of Dusty's family.
With
the bear thing. So for me, yeah, that's why I don't mind. He's still alive, and he clearly, someone ran it by him before he went out, and he clearly said, yeah, it's okay. Plus, he's one of those old school dudes. I feel like if you're paying him them checks that cash, there's not much you can do to Jerry Lawler that's going to piss him off.
Yeah, especially if you let him talk on a mic.
Exactly. Yep. He's the guy who slapped Andy Kaufman on Letterman. Let's not forget he's half of that. The guy understands what a work is.
Speaking of old school, how old is this guy? How old is Jerry?
I'm going to say he's in his late 60s, if not a little.
The nerve of this man.
Older.
To come out in Memphis, Tennessee in 2017 with a crown, a cape, and no shirt on.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
The flaps of the cape covered his titties just a little bit.
Oh, my God.
Just a little bit. Little
so
bit
much
titty.
Cleavage and belly.
Yeah.
He's the unofficial wrestling mayor of Memphis.
But he's been wearing Affliction shirts for 20 years.
Maybe they were in the wash.
Now he's King Henry VIII.
Yeah, you're right.
What he's become.
Oh, my God. That was such a frightening sight to me. Like, I could imagine being Dolph Ziggler and you walking down. This guy's talking shit? This guy?
He came out looking like the king in fucking Hamilton. He's ready for him to start singing.
I would kick him in the chest, too, talking to me crazy
you
like
sigh,
that.
The price of my love ain't a price that you're willing to pay.
God, I wish I'd seen him.
Puppies!
Look, let's move back to the Raw for a second, for real. I think we've all been waiting for the Charlotte versus Bayley match at the Rumble to gain a little bit of steam. And this week, we actually had Charlotte getting personal, knocking down Bayley for her childhood poems about being a wrestler. Let's hear it.
Do you see this? While Bayley was playing with pencils and writing about childhood dreams, you want to know what I was doing? I was winning state championships. She was writing in little notebooks.
Do you like wrestling? If so, check this box. We also saw something similar on SmackDown, where Natalya derided WWE's merchandise team for having so many shirts featuring Nikki Bella and none of her. She's got a shirt. Let's go to the clip.
Quick question. Where's the Nikki Bella merchandise? Where's the Nikki Bella? Oh, that's great. There's the Nikki Bella merchandise right next to the John Cena merchandise. Great product placement. Really good.
Hey. It was great. Yeah, I love her
it was
that
great.
Is the best work. That is the best, like, talking on a microphone work Natty has done
this
ever.
It's been a good feud for her.
Yeah.
And the brawl was fantastic. Even
was
though,
good.
Like, look, we know it's not a real merchandise stand. And that the one table was gimmicked to break when they jumped on it. But they looked like they wanted to fucking kill each other.
What if it was a real stand and they'd gimmicked the table and then someone just got excited and was like, I want that John Cena. Yeah.
I also love this. Looking like a real stand and there's John Cena merchandise and Nikki Bella merchandise and Bret Hart. Why
Bret
in
Hart
the
t-shirts?
Hell they have a random ass Bret Hart t-shirt?
I just really like Bret Hart.
Well.
So we had two different segments here for feuds. One's more of a verbal confrontation, and then on SmackDown it ended in a pull-apart fight. Do you feel one of them, Danielle, was more effective than the other, or were they just separate version, like you can't really compare them apples and oranges?
I loved both of them. I thought they were great. Like I said, I think that is some of the best work that Natty has done. Because really, I've been saying forever, like Natty's character should be like, you know, my family fucking hated WWE forever. And so I couldn't jump in when I was the young hot blonde that Vince would have pushed to the moon. And so now I'm here and I missed the Divas Revolution. You know, I came in when the Divas were doing their diva bullshit. And it was hard for me to really reach an inroad there because I was a really good wrestler. And now everyone's treating me like I'm too old to be part of the Divas Revolution or I've been around whatever. So this is what I've always wanted from her. But on the other hand, I will say that the Charlotte Bayley one was more important.
Okay.
Because WWE has occasionally done this thing where they take for granted that people have watched NXT and they've watched people grow and they've gotten their characters, and not everybody is like us. Not everybody's watching 10 hours of wrestling a week minimum. Like, not everyone wants to make time for that, and I understand. And so Bayley had, you know, a huge part of her character is, I'm the mark. I love wrestling. I love wrestlers. I lose my shit when I see a wrestler that I love. That has always been Bayley's thing. And when she came to the main roster, it was just kind of taken for granted that because she had all of these classics with Sasha, people would know her character, and they kind of didn't. And so she came in and she was the bright color girl and with the wavy arm men. And if you knew who she was or if you were a kid, you kind of connected immediately. But for a lot of people, they were like, I don't get it. What's her character? So both were great. That one was more important.
All right. That's a great point.
That's great.
Yeah.
I learned so much right now.
I think about stuff sometimes.
No, it's true.
You think, and you think good, you talk good, it's all good.
Yeah.
It's all great.
I love it. All right, we're done. I'm just going to go home. Yeah. It makes me so happy.
I can't have it.
Now, moving on to the women's champion on the blue brand, Alexa Bliss defended her championship against Becky Lynch inside the steel cage. What are you guys' thoughts on the first SmackDown women's main event?
I think I don't like cage matches anymore.
Really?
I think I don't. Because it's just hard to see.
There's been so many of them lately, too.
There is,
but I'm almost cage matched out.
Yeah.
And the whole idea of the cage is to keep people from interfering. And they kind of always do.
Because there's a note. Yeah, the idea of, like, they're finally
going to.
I like the story of this match. I thought it was a really solid match between two talented wrestlers who told a basic story, but a good story. I thought there was decent psychology in the match. Like, there's not it for me. It's hard for it to be groundbreaking because we've got groundbreaking after groundbreaking after groundbreaking for the last 6 months on Raw. But it's still it's easy to lose in the shuffle because it's not Charlotte and Sasha having a wrestling match. But it is Becky Lynch who is certainly on the same level as those women in terms of being talented and telling a story in the ring, even if her outside of the ring character doesn't quite fit the bill.
If not,
and Alexa,
better, but just not.
Yeah,
you know,
and then
she's not the guy.
Alexa keeps getting better and is learning through this feud, and we'll see sort of what effect it has later. So to me, it's special, and it's great to see SmackDown take that move as well. What did you think, Danielle?
Yeah, I thought it was great. Again, it is one of those things where it's like, man, we just did the cage match with Sasha and Charlotte. But, you know, Alexa's getting better and better and better. Obviously, very few people can touch her on the mic. And her in-ring work, she is really benefiting with dealing with, you know, Becky Lynch is young, but she's a friggin' veteran. And Alexa's really benefiting this time getting to see her. I do like that they're doing like a bigger women's match on SmackDown. I just wish it wasn't a cage because there's been so much cage shit.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, I think the problem is, I mean, what they have established with the Charlotte and Sasha matches was that like progress meant more gimmick matches, basically.
Because women hadn't been allowed to do gimmick matches, unless they were gimmick boobies.
Right.
Here's my gimmick.
Yeah, but like the standard gimmick matches that men participated in forever. And I think they kind of burnt that up a little bit. So now, even though the natural progression for a feud like Alexa and Becky is to do a cage match.
Right.
But it does feel like we've just seen that. We've just seen Hell in a Cell. So we've just seen so much like that, that it's not, you know, I think they have to get away from, you know, just gimmick matches in general. Especially if the whole gimmick is supposed to be to keep people out of the ring that don't belong in there. And they always show up.
Well, now that Mickie James has been confirmed as the intruder La Luchadora, how do you guys feel about her being back and being paired with Alexa Bliss? Like, I always like a good veteran worker in a division to help bring people along.
Absolutely.
And also, her match with Asuka was great.
I'm super happy that Mickie James is back. I think it's great. Like you said, having veterans come back, do some great work. Mickie has always been a great worker, and she's another one who was kind of in that weird moment in WWE when there wasn't as much of an emphasis, so I'm super happy. I'll take all those ladies back who didn't have a chance to really get into like wrestling back when people wanted to see nips.
Yeah.
Please, bring them back. Where's Kong?
Yeah, get me Jazz.
Yeah.
Oh, man, Jazz.
Oh,
she was
Jazz.
So scary.
Bring me all of those women back.
Yeah.
Let them kill it. For even for just a second, so that they can be in a moment where people are really like paying attention and giving credence to women's matches, because they done earned it.
Any thought about her? Usually they don't bring back a former star as a heel, so that's mm-hmm. interesting. And also, does she at all overshadow Alexa being that close to her?
That's the question.
That's a good question, but I think that Alexa's mic work is always going to set her apart from whomever she's working with.
Yeah, and they're not the same character.
Yeah, they're not the same character, and she might in the ring, and just the fact that we've got this nostalgia, like, hey, it's Mickey, but like, Alexa's mic work is always going to keep her fine. She's going to be, if she decides like she wants to move into a different thing in WWE, they will have her hosting Alexa's Bliss tomorrow on the WWE network, where she can just talk to people about whatever she wants. Interior decorating.
Yeah.
Harley Quinn,
yeah. Cool ways to wear, things you can put on your hand. Like, she will be just fine because she has those skills. So I don't worry about Alexa.
All right. Well, before we take a break, let's take a look at how both Raw and SmackDown have been building up to the Royal Rumble. They've had some of their biggest stars confront each other as the feuds build to the show. How do you guys feel about the build to the Rumble now that we're 2 weeks away?
It feels good. You know, this is the first Rumble in many years that is kind of unpredictable.
Yeah.
You don't know who's going to win it. I mean, the only people you can really rule out at this point are like Goldberg and Brock, because they're programmed against each other. Like, just about everybody else they announced could, you know, not that a bunch of people are likely, but it's really interesting. I'm honestly so excited to watch this Rumble just for sheer surprise factor of not knowing who's going to win and who might show up for it.
Yeah, same. I'm really last year's Rumble, I mean, it obviously just the surprises of people who came in and debuted. I feel like they're going to continue to kind of build on that. And so, yeah, I mean, Omega probs won't show up, but maybe Joe will. Like, we don't know what's going to happen. And so that's always super exciting. The Rumble is one of my favorite pay-per-views because I just want to see who shows up. Angle may show up. We don't know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would cry so many times.
No, I'm telling you, that music hits, I'm losing my shit.
I'm losing my shit
if that music hits.
Royal Rumble, absolutely my favorite event of the year every year for this exact reason. When they have a field where there are like five, where there are four to five potential winners and then a bunch of dark horses, that's a good Rumble. And this is an exceptional Rumble because of the stories they've told building up to it. On both sides.
If Taker wins, are we happy?
Yes.
I'm okay with it.
Okay, good.
I'm okay with it. I don't need it to be like the person who wins the Rumble is going to be the person who dominates the next year of programming. Although I will say, if Taker wins, to me, that means this is going to be his last year and he's going to do a run. And not that this will be his last WrestleMania. I think it would be that 2018 would be his last WrestleMania. But this would be his like goodbye tour if he wound up winning.
Has he ever won one? Do we know? Okay, he has.
Yeah, he has. He won it back in the mid-2000s. Maybe 2007?
Okay, I don't remember that shit at all.
As always, there's going to be a lot of news to get to each week. And if we missed something that you'd like to discuss, start the conversation at facebook.com/groups/tightsfights. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the UK Championship Tournament and how it highlighted one of wrestling's greatest strengths and annoyances. That's up next on Tights and Fights.
The three of you enter a cave of a big red dragon and is standing over a hoard of precious golden rubies. And he says, "What do you do, adventurers? I'm a dragon man."
I cast fire on him. It's very good.
I address the red dragon and say, "Us, we're the hosts of The Adventure Zone, a podcast about family playing Dungeons & Dragons."
Very good synergy. Commit to the bit.
I roll to charm new listeners. It is very effective against all odds.
Everybody, we're the McRoys. We host the Adventure Zones, a podcast where we play Dungeons & Dragons together. It's a comedy podcast. We don't take the rules too seriously because there's a lot of them and we did not take the time to learn them. Maybe listen to us. We come out every other Thursday on the Maximum Fun Network. You can find us on iTunes or on MaximumFun.org. I think this promo is a critical hit.
Tights and Fights.
rise and fight.
Welcome back to Tights and Fights. I'm Hal Lublin, and I'm joined in the booth by
Danielle Radford
and
Michael Eagle.
Every week we like to take a look at one corner of the wrestling world that deserves extra attention. This is our main event. Your main event. Wrestling is a performance art where the audience can often be an active participant in the action. Just take a listen to this moment from the UK Championship Tournament when the crowd started chanting for Saxon Huxley, who bore a striking resemblance to a certain biblical figure.
Oh, that's great. That's so great. Oh, now I'm going to watch it. My entire thesis has changed.
We had a very pumped crowd here tonight in Blackpool, an atypical United Kingdom crowd. Nigel, you have performed in front of them for many years.
Many times. You just never know what you're going to get, and that's why we love them.
In addition to that, the crowd also sang a bunch of songs, embraced the faces, booed the heels, and all the things a crowd usually does, plus more. So we're going to get into the specifics of a UK audience in just a minute. But Danielle, when does a crowd response get in the way of you as a TV viewer trying to enjoy the wrestling?
Obviously, what chance can fucking die? Right? Like, I'll just start out with what's.
Sure. Shoot the what chant in the face, yes.
Yep. Yeah, shoot the what chant. Right. When has a what chant ever added to your enjoyment of what's happening? Like, it's never been, and I get it, and again, and I'll say this over and over again because it's a really good bragging point for me. I was part of the audience in Seattle when we started cheering for Daniel Bryan during that episode when they were doing the unification ceremony. And,
ma'am, you dropped your pearls.
Oh, well, thank you, along with the names that I'll drop later. But yeah, so, and we were dicks, I admit that, but they took that and they rolled with it, and that was one of those times when it was like, well, the audience was clearly telling you who we liked and who we wanted, and
back when that used to work.
Remember that? And I feel like we kind of fucked it, like between us and England, because everybody saw the way that NXT in London was going, and they're like, "Oh, we can just sing some shit. We gon' just sing some shit," and especially Full Sail, because Lord knows they'll never be ignored or topped. Yeah, so sometimes as an audience, I think if you're using it to show, like, hey, we love this thing, we love this thing, we love this thing. Or in the case of Roman, I don't mind if people are booing, as long as they're not booing because they think the thing to do is boo.
Right.
If they're booing because they're like, dudes, you're not listening, and we're trying to tell you what we have an unwritten agreement that we tell you who we like, and you do things with them that we like. That's kind of the agreement that we have between audience and whatever. So as long as it's that, I don't mind. But when it's that thing of, like, you know, singing for Bayley, what was it? There was one NXT match where people were singing like we want Bayley, and singing like, hey, Bayley, and blah, blah, blah.
That was
in
the UK. That was in the UK.
Well, no,
but that brings up a good point.
Yeah, they did it again in NXT.
Sure,
with Bayley.
But they picked it up.
From the UK.
From the UK.
And Bayley was in the match, and they weren't paying attention to the match. They were too busy chanting that we want Bayley. And it's like, bro, she's right here.
So we talked about this UK instance a couple months ago. And my friend, Aaron Fever, who is Irish in nationality and birth and still lives there, wrote me a very long email, which was lovely. And he's a great wrestling fan and friend. Hello, Aaron. But he pointed out in that European fans singing throughout the entire match or segment is how they show appreciation for what's going on. And then there are other regional differences with crowds in wrestling. So Japanese fans are generally more quiet. Some will cheer the hometown heroes regardless of the heel face affiliation and so on. So every place it's different. The where it becomes an issue is I'm watching a UK crowd on the broadcast in the US. So I'm not used to, I don't know that until my friend writes me an email.
Right.
Does that stuff throw you off?
Yeah, I hate it, honestly. And I feel like the locus of it more, I mean, the locus of the problematic aspects of it is NXT. I feel like the problem in terms of the European crowd singing is not the fact that they sing, but it's just they sing in the wrong times. You know, like I feel like, you know,
for you watching, it's
like I feel like if you're singing, chanting in the beginning of a match, or you know, something, you know, where like that's the time, like we all know as wrestling fans, in the first like 2-3 minutes of a match, you have like a nice opportunity to let the people know who you're here to see and who you support in this match.
Right.
But then once the match starts, you want to be, like Daniel said, reacting to what's going on in the ring and not getting so caught up in the chant. Because I think, honestly, because there's been lots of European shows throughout wrestling history. We used to have whole pay-per-views there. Insurrections and Resurrections. I don't know what the hell else.
SummerSlam 92.
And they didn't do all that stuff then. I feel like what's happened is that the NXT crowd who are the smart marks who finally figured out where a hard camera is so they could all wear the same shirt and be standing in that area and get themselves over at the expense of the talent. And I think, like, they, you know, I feel like the ECW crowd was like the perfect balance. Like, I used to say all type of crazy shit, you know, but it was at the appropriate times. They were part,
right.
Like they were helping the match along. They were there to see the match. They were there to cheer on participants. They were there to let participants know when they fucked up. You know what I mean?
Right.
But
hey, remember that time you fucked up?
Right. You fucked up. Like, you know, all of that. I was listening to a wrestler who had gone to the Wrestle Kingdom show. And he was in the audience there, and he was watching the amazing Omega Okada match, and he was talking about how the Japanese fans were like perfect, you know, like they were cool when it was time to be cool. They were losing their shit when it was time to lose their shit. But he said he was sitting kind of by an American fan who was like cheering all of the heels and booing all the faces and like. Saying all of the smart mark stuff, and it just kind of echoed that thought to me, like that our smart mark training as U.S. fans now, and I think it's coming a lot from NXT. It's just kind of it's like the wrong way to go about doing things. I feel like it's the wrong spirit, and it's getting broadcast.
Okay, so there have been a bunch of cases of WWE crowds going rogue, hijacking the show, and making it all about them, like we've been talking about. Like, arguably, this moment in Chicago when Stephanie had to deal with the obligatory CM Punk chants. Let's hear that.
So if you guys could keep that up for about 2 minutes and 15 seconds, you'd last 1 second longer than Punk did.
So we talked about what audiences maybe can do to be a little bit, to lend to the experience a little bit more and improve their own experience. How much should the company try to control those kind of chants versus just letting the crowd have their fun? And how do you control it?
I mean, to be fair, Stephanie is a fucking genius.
Yeah.
She's been doing this for, you know, 20 some odd years now. And she's obviously, she had that line written and practiced the instant she saw that dude get up with his big Martin Lawrence getting hit in the face. She had that line about CM Punk practiced and ready to go.
Oh, Jesus.
So she had that right. And I do think at a certain point, part of it is the talent has to. If you are someone who is the talent, again, going back to that wonderful night back in Seattle.
You were there?
When we took over Raw. A thing that happened that was one of the first times I was like, yo, John Cena's fucking, I know that he's John Cena and we hate him, but like I had a lot of respect for him that night. He figured out the way to take those chants, acknowledge the crowd, acknowledge us, acknowledge that we wanted to see more Brian, and turn it so that now it was about the thing that they were talking about. So on the other hand, I do think that their talent's got to learn how to deal with unruly crowds like that. But CM Punk chance. I love Punk. I'm a huge Punk fan. I know I make fun of him, but it's the same thing as like pulling someone's pigtails. I just want Senpai to notice me. he's not coming back. And so I understand that part of the CM Punk chants are a way to be like, yo, we see what y'all did and we don't like it. But maybe we don't need them anymore. I don't know.
Yeah. I think you have to learn. The point you make here is the thing to hold on to is to give the talent the freedom and the ability to turn that into, you know, if you're the Miz handles that stuff really well.
Beautifully.
Because he turns it into heat for himself. So for a heel, it's even easier to do to turn that into heat.
Yeah.
But as a babyface, you've got to be able to do that as well. Not everybody's going to be John Cena on the mic. He is a very special performer in a lot of different ways. But
Sasha did do a beautiful moment.
Yeah, Sasha. And there are ways to do it, and it has to happen. It's performer training. Anyway.
And some of that does come with letting people learn how to talk on the mic in a way that isn't just following a script.
That's real.
Yes.
I'm talking so much this episode, you guys. I'm so sorry.
You're so good at it.
I love it. Yeah, you're real good at it.
Stop it.
Well, this topic is something that's probably going to keep coming up in the world of pro wrestling. And if you've got any thoughts, be sure to let us know at facebook.com/groups/tightsfights. When we come back, we'll have three wrestling moments that no crowd will ever taint because they're just for you. That's up next on Tights and Fights.
Mugs, shirts, stickers, patches, tanks, and more are yours for the purchasing at MaxFunStore.com. Hey, you already love the podcasts, so why not take this to the next level and outfit your home and bod with our merch? MaxFunStore.com. Because if you have to wear a shirt, it should be one of ours.
Tights and Fights. Podcast, Tights and Fights.
Welcome back to Tights and Fights. I'm Hal Lublin, and I'm joined in the booth by
Danielle Radford
and
Michael Eagle.
Every week, we like to show by. Every week, we like to end the show by sharing some of the joy of pro wrestling with you. This is the three count. Damn bell. Danielle, you're up first. What do you want to put over?
So I'm from Seattle, as I don't know if I've mentioned in this podcast at all.
Did you ever go to Raw while you were in Seattle?
I did go to Raw. Funny you should ask. Seattle now has always had really restrictive rules when it comes to sporting events, and they consider wrestling to be a straight-up sporting event, and so it has to follow those rules. So it's been really hard to get any not-underground wrestling in Seattle, aside from WWE, who can afford all of the stuff that you have to do to have a wrestling show.
Right.
And so now there is finally the first legal indie promotion in Seattle, for so many years, 20 years or something crazy like that. And they are Defy Wrestling. And so I am just super hyped that now we finally are getting, because it's been hard to get a lot of these really good indie guys to go to Seattle because no one wants to do anything that's going to risk your career. And Cody was there. And while Cody was there, he was getting ready to do a match against, I believe, the dude who is Killshot in Lucha, and I can't remember his real name right now. I'm a bad person. And while he was doing it, people were chanting for Cody, and then a different chant started. If you find the clip online and you can find it, Cody does a little kind of Stardustian cartwheel and then flicks the dude off. And it was great. So giving it up to Cody, giving up for the Zeus Defy, giving up for my boys, my friends, Mr. Fitness and Eddie
name.
Van Glam. Oh, yeah. It's great. Mr. Fitness and Eddie Van Glam doing a great thing on the indie wrestling. And I'm just really excited to see what happens for Seattle Independence, you guys.
Congratulations, Seattle
Wrestling. Yeah, we're a person.
Mike? What are you going to put over?
You know.
Is it have walnuts in it?
You know. You take the Bruce Pritchard and Conrad. And
do you think we could buy one of his shirts and get him to call into the show
as
the thank you?
Absolutely we can.
Fantastic.
Absolutely.
Book it.
But who wrote this shit?
It's out of the box of gimmicks.
I'm putting over one of my favorite podcasts once again this week on Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. The subject was Ravishing Rick Rude, and they profile his career and all of that. And at the end, Bruce tells this amazing story of when he ribbed Ravishing Rick Rude by accident, which was a huge deal because if you ever ribbed Ravishing Rick Rude, he would beat the holy hell out of you. So to set it up, one day coming from a show somewhere, it was Vince and Pat and Bruce and I think Macho Man and some people all in the back of a limo getting a lot of the drunk. And they started passing around Vince's car phone and prank calling people. And at one point, they started having Bruce Pritchard, who does a great Dusty impression. Jim Ross was there, too, because Jim Ross had the list of all of the talent at WCW. He had all their phone numbers. So they had him pretend to be Dusty and call everybody in the Turner Building. Now, they had Bruce set up to think he was going to call Ric Flair. And he was actually calling Rick Rude. And here is a clip from it.
A call.
That too.
Answer's phone. Hello. Ricky, baby. Hey, baby, it's the Dream. Listen, baby, I'm a little fucked up right now. I had a few beers. Been out of the bar. I'm in my little red convertible Mercedes. I'm heading home. This Shelly and everybody. But I got an idea. I want to run by you. So how about you come on into the office in the morning, but I need you to get there early before anybody else. All right? I don't want anybody to see you. So come on in to the office early in the morning, baby, and I'll be in, and we'll talk about it, because I want to present it to you. I'm a little fucked up right now. A little fucked up. Had a few beers. I want to present it to you in person and see the look on your face when I tell you this idea.
So apparently,
all right, Dream.
When Rude got there, it was like 6 in the morning,
oh,
and everybody was pissed because apparently Bruce, as Dusty, called a bunch of people. All super mad. And Dusty didn't even show up till like 11:30.
Oh, jeez.
So it was a lot, and Rick was mad. But you should listen to it because it's great. It's fantastic. I was driving down the highway, riveted, listening to him do all the impressions of everyone involved in this story.
Oh, my God. I think I must have. I listened to it as I was falling asleep, and I missed that, so I'm going to find it.
Gotta do it.
As for me, I was going to put over Kurt Angle, some classic Kurt Angle, but then I watched Talking Smack. And again, great television show.
I love it.
It's so good. A lot of great moments in it. Shane McMahon filling in for Daniel Bryan, but as their second guest, they had the lone wolf, Baron Corbin, who laid out some great plans for his Q1 of 2017. Let's listen to that.
I'm leaving the Royal Rumble as a champion. Then I'm going to fight my way into the Elimination Chamber. I'm going to become WWE champion. And then going into WrestleMania, not only am I WWE champion, I'm the number one contender. So in the main event of WrestleMania, I'm going to walk out. I'm going to stand in the middle of the ring. I'm going to hold up my championship, and I'm going to tell everybody, I told you so. Then I'm going to get in my car, go back to Tampa, and enjoy my night.
That is the greatest thing ever.
Oh, it's so great.
Possibly the best I've ever heard, but like best promo from that
team. Oh, no, he's killing it now.
Yeah.
I feel like he's on track to be the first star they've made in a long time. I feel like he's really getting over really well as a heel and looking the part and sounding the part. They covered his belly button up.
No!
Yes, they did. His
no
belly
tummy.
Button's no longer
no
out.
Tummy.
I'm so happy they covered up that gigantic sad face. little sad mouth
hashtag
belly button.
Team Little Tummy.
Little Tummy. Well, that does it for this week on Tights and Fights. We are a podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. Our hosts are Danielle Radford and Mike Eagle, along with me, Hal Lublin. Our producer in Silence Behind the Violence is Julian Burrell. Senior producer at Maximum Fun is Laura Swisher. Mike Eagle is the voice behind our theme music as well, so we're putting him over for that. Keep up with us all week long at facebook.com/group/tightsfights and at tightsfights on Twitter. And if you love the show, remember to hit those 5 stars on iTunes and share us with all your friends. We'll be back next week for even more, you guessed it, wrestling.
Tights and Fights Podcast. Tights and Fights.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.